Good evening and a warm welcome everyone to Ragamuffin Radio and to the second program in the series of the Ragamuffin Rambles, the program where you, the listener, join up with us two Ragamuffins, Miscreant Mike and myself, Brian the Old Silver Fox, as we set out to explore the highways and the byways of the English countryside, seeking out only the very finest in acoustic music and any associated stories to tell. So, settle back in your most comfy armchair as once again we set out upon our musical travels. And where, you may ask, are we bound for on this particular Ragamuffin Ramble journey?
I really liked the 68 Festival. There was a great atmosphere. The acts were absolutely exceptional. Even the weather was okay.
So, the Dylan Festival. Yeah, of course, we knew there was going to be a lot more because we had advance ticket sales and all that stuff. You know,
how many came to the first one, roughly?
Oh, about 5 or 6 thousand, that's all.
Telegram from Mr. Dylan. Bob Dylan stays in a Bembridge farm. I will post his mail every day on her bike.
Many moons ago, must have been the summer of 1970, I came down to this beach because it was quite spectacular. There were all these bare naked ladies running around, and out of the Isle of Wight's population, the ones that couldn't stand the pop festival or who said it was such a terrible thing, all these dirty hippies, they were all down here as well, getting an eyeful.
Cracking music there, Brian, from Pawathi and SG. There's two islanders that are going to lure us across to the other side of the water today. We're going to go from Lymington to Yarmouth.
Crossing the bar, eh? Lymington to Yarmouth, like Tennyson.
Yep, just like Tennyson. And I'm going to take you right to the foot of his noble down, where the poet said the air was just like sixpence a pint.
Sixpence a pint, or a tenner a pint. Well, most people don't even remember what sixpence is these days, Michael.
They don't.
And how about Jimi Hendrix?
He is still haunting Afton.
So this is going to be a trip back in time, then. Not much happening these days, I suppose.
Well, you hang on to your hat, Nipper, because we're going to push out the boat from Lymington to Yarmouth in more ways than one.
To emotion, my fortune I thought birds will carry me home once my journey was through. And the loneliest sight is the vanishing sail as it eases away from familiar places. But one of these days, on a faraway beach, you may come across even the faintest of traces of beach boats made with affection, cast to their fate with a whispered adieu. Beach boats, just flotsam and jetsam, but shaped by the hand of a dreamer, a dreamer like
our first call today then, Mike.
Well, we're going to stop at this bus kiosk, right, if you could just pull in over there.
A bus kiosk?
Yeah, because we're going to go and meet Keith Gore, migrant songwriter from way up north in Mansfield, who happens to run the open top buses from Yarmouth Quay to the Needles Battery.
Well, when he got to the Gaffers Festival, which is in June, and people saying, you know, are you going to do something for the Gaffers Festival? It was also coinciding with the Queen's Golden Jubilee. And I thought it's got to be something eclectic, something a little bit different, something that sums up Yarmouth. And last year, I noticed that we used to keep finding spoons in the bus station. Filthy spoons, bent spoons. Spoons covered in some, you know, various substances. And I actually thought, well, it'd be a laugh to sort of make it like a fringe festival for the Gaffers, you know, thing, and have a spoon exhibition. So we did that, and we sort of got the top 10 TV shows as well, like Changing Spoons and Parking Spoons and Spoon Benders and Little Spoon on the Prairie and Top 20 Music, Dancing Spoon by ABBA. We also had Exhibit A, which was a spoon on elastic, which you can see here, which sort of dances around. And we actually put the R in it because this local accent, the southern accent, being dancing.
And of course, you're from Mansfield.
Yeah, and a lot of people down here, the satire is that they actually come and read it as, oh, a dancing spoon. And they don't even notice the R that's in the word. And then people started to send us other spoons then, and started to take it a little bit more serious than it originally intended to be. So then it also got in the press and onto different things, and people come and started interviewing us about what's this about the spoon collection. We got the spoon of St. George, and which was just a silly cross spoon, red and white cross spoon. But my favourite is the Christmas treacle trowel. Very late 1950s, when Christmas meant Christmas and not a pathetic four nights in Lanzarote.
Thank you. saw St. Michael come alive out of the sea. He was standing on his statue and staring at you and me. He said, get up, get up, you lazy bums, get up and fight for your life. Never let it be said in this fair land, I did not do things right. Rock and roll. With just one look of those terrible eyes, he said, come on, let's go. Through streets of pain and sorrow, we walked as if in a trance. He said, today's a Sunday, I dare you all to dance.
Brian, this is Yarmouth's old abandoned railway station. It's a pretty idyllic spot, isn't it, eh?
And we've just wandered round from roughly where the Yarmouth Ferry Terminal, half a mile, in front of a most gorgeous converted, what appears to be a water mill over there.
Yeah, it's the old water mill.
Onto the east of the River Yar, yeah. Estuary, yeah?
That's the East Yar, yeah.
And this station here, which was at one time Yarmouth, is now completely abandoned and obviously used for other purposes, offices or whatever.
The trains don't run anymore.
That's got to be a good intro for a song, I would think.
Thank you. Over there's Tennyson Down, which you can, from that cross, you can see all over the West White. That's a good place to spot hooded white figures walking up on the dank evenings. And then over there's Thompson Bay, which is the airscape, and that's a good place to hover. This railway line was dug up in 1953. It was actually only ever used once. It was built in 1913 to take the troops to France. When they'd emptied the West White of able-bodied men, they just tore up the tracks.
Well, once I was lonely and out on my own, I never knew about you. Long and you taught me this song. Well, how about you? Sunbeams, moonbeams, moonlight, starlight, and you. Well, I can tell you when you put that. I was deaf, but I had the gift to hear. I never heard about you. Then you came along and you taught me this song. Well, how about you? Sunbeams, moonbeams, moonlight, starlight.
Brought you, Brian, up to the farthest western tip of the Isle of Wight, probably one of the most spectacular views anywhere. There's the Needles Rock staying there and the Needles Lighthouse and the Needles Battery, the gun battery before it, old Victorian gun battery. What a spectacular view we've got up here across these waters as well to the mainland.
Absolutely amazing, Mike. We're stood up here, folks, for the benefit of our listeners, and we're looking over the western approaches to the Solent and up into Southampton Water. We can see the Spit on the other side of the water over there. Visibility is not particularly brilliant today, and we've just come up on an open-top double-decker bus, a very much an English traditional thing, up some absolutely hairpin bends, haven't we, Mike?
It's great, wouldn't it, eh? Absolutely fantastic. And we're just going to take a walk and have a look at the cliffs as well. Right, that's a spectacular view, Brian, eh? The Needles as close as you can get to them. That's the gap between the two lots of rock there that we see, and you'll see on the website, is where the galleon went down with the gold on it. So if you want to go diving down there, you'll probably find a load of stuff that was bound for Spain in about the 17th century, I think it was.
put it this way, Mike, if it's more than 3 foot deep, forget it.
And over that hill, if we walked over that hill about 20 minutes, we'd be up at Tennyson Monument, and we'd be looking down over Freshwater Bay from the other way, which is where Tennyson wrote Charge of the Light Brigade.
Where is this windy lane going to take us through to then, Mike?
Well, we're going to poodle down past Farringford House, which was the home of Tennyson when he lived on the island. And it will eventually lead us down Freshwater Bay. More importantly, it will lead us past Dimbola Lodge. And we're going to drop into Dimbola Lodge today to meet Ron Turner Smith and Brian Hinton, because we're going to see where Victoriana meets psychedelia and Queen Victoria gets to take cannabis in her tea.
Good gracious me.
I can't get involved. I'll give you a potted history. There's organisation I'm involved with, Island Watch, was a conservation organisation. One of the members was Richard Greenwood, and he alerted that organisation to the fact that I was the chairman, that this house was going to be knocked, at least part of it, either knocked down, and it was in danger of being demolished. So a small group was formed, and they tried to get the thing moving to raise money. They spent about 2 years and they got about 2,000 quid in. So that to me wasn't going fast enough, so we called another public meeting, and we decided to produce a decent brochure. You know, when the lottery came about, we thought, well, yeah, that's a suit us a treat, because in this part of the world, you know, the corporate sponsors are few and far between that want to help somebody on the Isle of Wight. we applied to the lottery, Heritage Lottery Fund. We had a very good application, and I'm sure that it couldn't have been much better. We had a business plan, educational policy, disabled policy, you name it, we had it. Well researched, well done. It turned us down, didn't it? In so many words, they said the Isle of Wight wasn't the place to have a museum to Julia Margaret Cameron. Said, well, the house is the museum, we don't have to build one, all we got to do is restore it. So we soldiered on. We had Olympus show up, but they came by a lady who was doing a review of the leading photographers' houses of past and some present. Olympus were very good, and when this female that was on this survey for them came round, she said, my husband used to be the director of the Olympus Gallery, because Olympus used to have a gallery in London. She said, when we go back, we'll call in. He lived just outside Winchester at the time, Barry Taylor. So they did, and about a week later, perhaps 10 days, his marketing director rang up, Ian Dickens, who is the great-grandson of Charles Dickens. Yeah, and he said, you got a problem, he said, I understand. He said, Barry's been on to me. I said, yeah. And Barry, of course, was a great fan of Julia Margaret Cameron in the MD Olympus. So I said, yeah. He says, well, how much do you want? So, you know, I took a stab, and I always kick myself. I said, 10,000. All right, he says, I'll put a check in the post. I should have said 20 to this day. Anyway, well, during his reign of power, and he retired about, must be 3 or 4 years ago now, we had over £100,000 off him. In real money, you know.
Yeah, real
focus. Yeah, no hassle, no checking the post, checking no the
The point is that this is a Victorian house that we've restored, but when those two Americans came over, who owned a very valuable Cameron album from, was it Palo Alto or whatever, and they said, we thought you were too old academics, you're too old hippies, aren't you? and so were they, actually. And it's important because that Ron did sort of mastermind all the three huge Isle of Wight pop festivals, and we've now got this permanent exhibition, which we'll see later, of memorabilia from those festivals, but also that there is a sort of continuity between the spirit of them and what was going on here in the great Victorian time.
Yeah, it's this great meeting of Victoriana and
psychedelics. Yeah, that's right, yeah, exactly, yeah. And God, when you think that Queen Victoria was taking cannabis in her tea, you know? And they... quite legally then.
Dimboga today. I always think that it's kind of like a mixture of Victoriana and psychedelia when I come here. Because you've got the Isle of Wight Pop Festival display.
That's what's inside my head, just
Can you tell us a bit about the festivals and...
What about the exhibition here?
Yeah, and the exhibition here.
Well, the thing is that the exhibition, most of the stuff is from my own personal archive, because just as Ron was the man who actually put them on, I spent the last 30 years being... No, I suppose the official historian of the festivals, and I've also collected everything in sight. So we've got all the original posters, tickets, the programmes, this very rare books that came out about the same time about the festivals, all kinds of stuff really, and some bootleg albums, Bob Hendricks, The Isle of Wight, whatever. So it's trying to sort of, I mean, I'm an archivist by training as a librarian, and just as it's important to put together things about the Freshwater Circle, which is what we collect here, Tennyson, Cameron, G.F. Watts, Edward Lear, whoever, Charles Dodgson. By the same token, that you apply the same techniques to this psychedelic stuff. Like, we've got some very rare Roney-Ode Freak Press things, which were given out free to people there by Mick Farren and the White Panthers. And that is just as precious in its way as a photograph of Dimbola when it was two original houses before Mr. Cameron put the tower on. They're all artefacts that it's our job to conserve, to keep for future generations, really, you know.
The drill that dampens every crevice, the grind that soils the stream, the nation that's forged its own shackles, the red brick that swallowed the green. It's no place for one of such beauty. The poison will soon reach your heart, they'll scuffle your shine till it's blackened. So come take your chances with me, I wanna take you down to the river and follow the source to the mouth. From there we'll steal a boat and follow the vapor trail south. Citrus and saffron, terracotta and amber and green, where the sun will greet us as strangers, with our skin as pale as the moon. Take you down to the river and follow the source to the mouth. Follow the tree of the south. I wanna steal you away from this halogen night and show you there are stars that sparkle just as bright as you. I wanna take you down to the river and follow the source to the mouth.
Yeah, I was on the committee of the Isle of Wight Indoor Swimming Pool Association. It was suggested we had a fundraiser, so I said yeah. And I said, then I was the person who could help us there. This was Ronnie Fowke, who was working for Watson Bull and Porter's estate agent. Now, that being said, I had a chat with Ronnie and Ray, and Ronnie said, yeah, he'd take the job on. And we could have a pop festival. So I went back and told the council, the committee, and they said, yeah, yeah. And I said, it'll need some money to start it off. How much? And I said, 750. So they voted 750, you know. Fair enough. Now, 750 was a lot of money, you know, in 1968. So, Ronnie, with his contacts in the estate agent world, had a chat, and we went and saw Steve Ross, and he said yeah, and he suggested one or two farmers. So we got onto Jimmy Flux, who besides farming, and his family had about three or four or five farms, you know, over that way. He said, yeah, he said, I've got some ground, Ron. He said, come and have a look at it. So I went and had a look at it. And it was a stubble field, 100 acres of stubble. You know. where I arranged to meet Ricky Farr, who joined the scene by then, and running out there, paced out this field. There was a drop to one side with a brookway down the bottom, so we paced it out, having the stage down the slope and footlong, and the entrance near the lane. And there's some broken bales from the baling, so we put those around. And back, and I got onto the manager of British Road Services on the Isle of Wight, and he let me have, I think it was four of these low loader, you know.
That was the stage.
Yeah, that was the stage, yeah.
This is where Jeff's airplane flicked off.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
And how many people did you expect were going to attend this festival?
I ain't got a clue.
It was just an open-ended situation?
Oh yeah, we hadn't got a clue. We got onto a firm in Winchester, and what he did, give me his due, he did the dealings on that one, to get a generator down, and we got a generator down from Winchester to generate juice. And
how about your sound equipment? Where did that come from?
Oh, that was Wem, I think it was Wem, you know, in those days, even, yeah. You know. And, yeah, it'd be, because I didn't know much about sound equipment then, but, you know, you soon learn, don't you? So, yeah, the water board, as it was water board, Southern Water, didn't want to know us then. So, what happened was, my wife used my van, we bought some new dustbins, and she went round the garages. You know, scrounging water, you know, off on. That's how we got water to the site, you know. Yeah. And
because this is the first festival we're on, isn't it, at Godsill? So the one that, what we call the Forgotten Festival, because everyone remembers the next year, don't they?
Well, what, with Dylan?
Yeah, that's the chat.
Anyway, that festival went off all right. We put black plastic round, you know, around the walls, about 6 foot high. It wasn't metres in those days. Because funny enough, most of the kids were sort of 15, 16, 17, 18. There weren't many older ones, and it hadn't gripped them, you know, because it was a new thing. And there was no sort of pop festival culture in 68. They'd read about them and heard about them in the States.
I really liked the 68 festival. It was a great atmosphere. The acts were absolutely exceptional. Even the weather was okay. I saw Arthur Brown last year for the first time after the 68 festival. He asked me if I got his chips. I completely forgot. I said I'd get him some. Jefferson Airplane brought their own light show along with them, which was very good. It was a lot better than the usual bubbles and oil splurges which we were used to, have white rabbits exploding on the screen and what have you. And the screen, which was like a big sheet, was blowing out behind them like the sail of a Viking ship. It was all very atmospheric. I think a high proportion of the audience were locals, which meant we weren't totally playing to a load of stoned hippies, which made a change. Although I think there could have been a few out there. It was more like a big party in a field, really.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
Saved and earned, all of it's gone to burn. But you tell him what you know.
So, the Dylan Festival. Yeah, well, of course, we knew there was going to be a lot more because we had advance ticket sales and all that stuff, you know.
How many came to the first one?
About 5,000 or 6,000, that's all. Ray produces brochure. It was a beautiful brochure, yeah.
Did it showcase like Tennyson's Not Far Out
and
stuff?
Well, I can't recall much about it. I mean, that I can see the pages now and just open it. And it was the great Isle of Wight Pop Festival stuff, you know, open it. And it was glossy, all chrome card to start with, the little chrome leaves, about 8 or 10 leaves in it.
Is it right that he didn't make up his mind to actually come until quite close to the end?
Well, what happened was we planned for a second one. So, that being said, Ray produced this brochure and we wrote together, I think it was about £100 or so, enough to get into the States, to Dylan. He could get his ticket, return ticket, he could land in New York, he could hire a taxi, which would have landed about £5, if I remember rightly, and then, if Dylan asked him in, he had to use his wits and stay there, if he could, or he then had to get the taxi and come back from the airport without a stay in New York himself, because we just hadn't got the money for him to do that. So anyway, Ray went off and he took this brochure and he went off and that was it, you know. He came back with a draft of a contract which Dylan was happy to sign up to. When you got in Dylan's name as, you know, you could show you got a signature, you know, the...
Like collateral in the bank.
It was, yeah, it was like money in the bank, yeah. And, it took off from there, you know.
Hi, Judy.
Hiya.
Perhaps you could outline once again for us the background with regard to Dylan at Foreland Farm, into how you were approached to take on the role in the first place.
Right, I was approached by the Fiery Creations, Ray Falk to be exact, saying that Dylan was coming over with his children, would I go and look after them at Foreland's Farm? And as my children were all fans of Dylan, I had to say yes. As it happened, his children didn't come, but I was employed for a week at Foreland's Farm to cook and look after him and George Harrison and lots of other hangers-on, which was quite exciting in some ways.
Was he quiet in his personality? How would you...
Very quiet.
Well-mannered?
Very quiet, very polite, almost painfully shy, I used to think. But nevertheless, I liked him straight away. I liked his green eyes and his good manners I liked very much. And that we had to all sit down to the meal together, like a family, 10 of us. And it was... he didn't strike me as being a pompous pop star at all.
So most of the time he was in rehearsal then with Harrison and the band?
Exactly, yes. All day with Harrison, going on and on, and I'm providing them with tea and cakes and cookies, and in the evening with the band, after we'd finished supper, he'd done a few songs indoors, we'd go to the barn and listen to the band. I knew the band too, I liked them.
Did he appear nervous before the concert?
Yes,
yeah.
Fairly nervous, pacing up and down, worried a bit about it, and keep on asking Sarah, am I all right, do I look right, is this shirt right, you know. Yes, he did seem nervous. Mm-hmm.
Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big friend's bed. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Whatever colors you have in your mind, I show them to you, and you see them shine. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while. Until the break of day, let me see you make them smile. His clothes are dirty, but his hands are clean. And you're the best thing that he's ever seen. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while. Why wait any longer for the world to begin? You can have your cake and eat it too. Why wait any longer for the one you love when he's standing in front of you? Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead. I long to see you in the morning light. I long to reach for you in the night. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead.
Well, we started under 1971, and I got struck by a virus of some sort. You know, I don't know what it was, but I had to go to bed. And I remember Ronnie coming round and saying, "We've had a meeting with the chief constable in Winchester, and they want you to get up off your bed and get back onto organising the site." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, the predictions of the crowd, you know, there'll be about 200,000 or 300,000 people there." I had some of the lads that had worked on the stage at Woodstock, and that's how we knew that we were much better than Woodstock. They'd worked there, and they said, "Man, this is much better organised than Woodstock." And Woodstock was a shambles, man, you know. What you're having to do is build a small city in a matter of weeks with all the facilities. You know, we just want to see how you manage it. Yeah, we had the biggest marquee in Europe, I understand, we've got. Well, I always liked Joan Baez, you know, in the last one. I've always did like her. Dylan was good, but by common sense, common consent, Richie Havens was better than Dylan at the Wooten one.
The people sing on the road.
Right, here we are then, Brian. This is Compton Bay. This is Compton Beach down below us. And as you can see, the car park has all fallen away. This is the other side of... We've got Tennyson Down in the distance there. We can just make out up there. Can you just see the actual point of Tennyson's monument there?
Just see the memorial.
Just on the cliff there. There's an old boat wreck out there that's been out there for about, I don't know, 50 years. And just behind us there is the bit of brick there in the sea that they used to use for target practice in Victorian times. But there's a lot of history about this beach, and there is actually a song called Airstoke, and it's by Robin Hitchcock. Let's let him explain all about it.
Thank you.
many moons ago, it must have been the summer of 1970, I came down to this beach because it was quite spectacular. There were all these bare naked ladies running around, and out of the Isle of Wight's population, the ones that couldn't stand the pop festival, who said it was such a terrible thing, all these dirty hippies, they were all down there as well, getting an eyeful. And over that down, just across that down, where all the hippies had come like a procession, was the Afton Festival that Ron Turner Smith has been telling us about. And that's where nearly 500,000 people were. Joan Baez and Joni Mitchell performing, and Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, Sly and the Family Stone, The Who, you name it, they were all there. Brian, you've just finished the book, or it's just been published, Ashley Hutchins. Can you just give us a little bit of information about it?
Yeah, well, actually, the project started here, funnily enough. Well, it started in Winchester, that I and my co-author, Jeff Wall, had an audition from Ashley, who, of course, founded Fairport Convention, Steel Eyes Band, the Albion Band, who is sort of the person responsible for the whole revival of specifically English music. First of all, folk rock, rocking up traditional songs, basically, and then from that, going into a specific English direction. What we decided to do was actually, I'm a friend of Ian Sinclair, the novelist, who's part of what they call the psychogeographical movement, which is basically that you go to places and you sort of draw out, as artists or whatever, or writers, you draw out from these places the history and the atmosphere and all that sort of stuff, you know. There's quite a mystical view of landscape and place. And so we took Ashley to the places that mattered to him, literally the places that mattered to him, with a film crew as well. It's all been filmed for a TV documentary. So we went to where Steel Eyes Span were put together, and he started almost crying because it brought him back to him. He'd had a nervous breakdown after the crash that killed the drummer at the airport. It had all come out really a few years later when they started Steel Eyes Span in 1970, that they were in this little cottage in a little village near Salisbury, and just remember how cold it was. He sat on the park bench, and we actually had the publicity photographs of Matty Pryor, again Terry Woods, Tim Hart, Ashley, and then we were actually in the same locations, you know, 30 years on, you know. But the same, a few months later, we went to a happier place in some ways, where Legion Leaf was put together. So really, English folk rock was invented, British folk rock. And by being in that place, and this is what the book contains, lots of original interviews with his ex-wife, Shirley Collins, Martin Carthy, John Tams, Richard Thompson himself, Simon Nicol, is actually interviewing all these people about Ashley. And again, with Simon Nicol and Richard Thompson, we took them back to Muswell Hill, where Fairport were founded. And it was really touching, actually, to us, because by then it was getting dark, there was candlelight, this lovely bistro in Muswell Hill, and there's Ashley, Richard, Simon, and you think of those album sleeves, where they're all together, and these are the three that between them invented folk rock, basically, you know, and have gone their separate ways, but are still very affectionate friends. And, you know, actually having the three of them by candlelight now, it was really touching. You could see the friendship was still there, of course. And then we all went over to the Fairport house, so we stood in the rain, and they came reminiscing, and then Simon said, well, that was the window, that was your room up there, wasn't it? And then Richard made some wise crack, you know, and it was magical. So that's what the book is about. It ends in 1973, when Ashley walked away from music, as he thought. Wasn't that easy, Ashley. But he'd really given it all up. The Albion Band had been a disaster in his eyes, not ours, listening to the tapes. He went back to being a village postman.
At the Hare and Hounds pub, Arryton, in the centre of the Isle of Wight, what's said to be the skull of murderer Michael Murray is on display, together with information on the myth and reality of his early 18th century legend. Prepare to be spooked. Michael Murray, he is dead, but chopping off his grandson's head. He is hung on Arryton Down for rooks and ravens to peck him down. Local children sing this rhyme, and still recall the ghastly crime. Once it was a Bronze Age bump, now they call it Murray's Hump. Timbers from the gibbet stand, with his skull near at hand, now within the tavern found, Michael Murray's still around. Should you stop to take a drink, you may for a moment think, as you take a sip or two, Murray's skull is watching you. Keep your peace, button your lip, don't let idle mocking slip. You may be in for a surprise, for walls have ears and skulls have eyes.
English folk music at its absolute best. Ashley Hutchins and the Ridge Riders, I believe.
Yeah, that was from a live concert they did, and that's an Isle of Wight song, isn't it?
It is. I tell you what, all this folk music, chum, has given me a bit of a thirst.
Do you fancy some music with your pint, then?
I certainly do.
Right, you keep heading down this military road like we are doing. We'll drop down to Ventnor, I'll introduce you to the Grimshaws, and we'll sit and listen to music at the Spyglass Inn on Ventnor Seafront. How's so, that say?
Eastward bound then, eh?
It certainly is.
Down to Ventnor.
Definitely a hand clapping set of tunes. Fancy clapping your hands.
heart. Jerk Brandy to Julia, busking in the devil's yard. Had luck in bad times. Don't hold no charge for me. I'm getting drunk on milk and honey, and I'm going back to my used to be. Won't you bring your sweet stuff, honey? Cause the only happy needed comes with a kiss and blues. When now turning wine to water, there's nothing quite as mean. And people packing problems, we're a heart attack machine. Hard work and worry just buys a box of wine. But if you come for wine and kisses, you'll always be the girl of mine. Comes with sweet old kiss and blues. When the only happy needed comes with sweet old kiss and blues.
Yeah.
the sugar on the cane. I'm so scared I might melt if I went stepping in the rain. Oh, but if you wanna shift my sugar, you gotta need a long freight train.
It'll be midnight now, Bri, I think.
Well, we best make a move or we might miss it.
Okay, mate.
I tell you what, it's a beautiful night.
Yeah, I don't think we can hang about, Bri. I reckon we've got to get on and get that ferry.
Yeah, we best go. before we go, let's say good night to listeners.
Good night, listeners.
Good night, listeners. Until the next time.